comes in your presence, you're going to have to move. You're going to have to move. You can't resist it. No more than darkness can resist light. Those people cannot resist lies. People who are thirsty for the water, the pure water of moral teaching, who are thirsty for an example, somebody to show them what righteousness and character, good human character is all about. They're looking for somebody like that. They don't know he's here yet, but they will. They will. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. They're going to know it. One way or another, they're going to know that there's a man that has been raised up by Allah, a man who has received none of the inspirational teaching, none of the acquired knowledge. Why is there so much misery and suffering? Huh? If the world was so right, if these psychologists and sociologists and these religious popes and rabbis and things had the right, why has the world been produced? Such a world of such confusion and corruption been produced? If they got the light, what are they doing with it? They ain't got it. They ain't got it. You got it. You got it. Use it. Get up and use it. It's a powerful thing, brothers and sisters. It is a powerful thing that Allah has blessed us with. And you won't know the reality of it until you get up and use it. If you don't get up and use it, that power will sit there with you that you got. But that's not all of it, what you got. Don't think by a long shot that you have a monopoly on the light. Don't think by a long shot, by any fraction of the imagination, that you have a monopoly, that nobody has this light but you. Because Imam Wali B. Muhammad ain't depending on you. He ain't depending on us. He's depending on Allah. Follows the guidance of Allah. And you don't know what all this man is doing. I don't know what all this man is doing. I know he has a mission. I know he's sincere and devoted to the mission. He is not devoted to the Malalian people. He is devoted to human society. He's devoted to the mission of spreading the light and life about Islam, and he's going to get that job done. And the same God who revealed to him and manifested to him this light is going to also show him the people who are going to distribute it. With this light, you'll sit there and you'll look at it. You'll sit there and look at it, and you'll invite your friends over, and you'll say, oh, this is what I got. I am a part of the world community of Islam in the West. I am a follower of Imam Wali B. Muhammad. I got this Quran. This is the book that we follow, you know. Yeah, you'll do that with a few people. You'll do that every now and then. It's in your house. You got a picture of Imam Wali B. Muhammad on your wall. You tell your relatives and friends that my name is Ahmad Shirai, Muhammad Sharif, Hassan, Rashid, Abdullah. You tell them? But you don't get out into the reality. You don't walk down the street in the character of a Muslim. You don't walk down the street on your job in the character of a Muslim. On your job, you your role. On your job, you your blow. Or Henry McIntosh. There's another surah with that I'm practicing on, learning Arabic, thanks to the gift of the transliteration by Brother Jabir Muhammad. May Allah be pleased with him and bless him. There's a surah, Al-Nafa, the help. That surah says, I'll give you the English because I haven't learned it yet. I haven't got it to you right yet. I haven't got to the extent where I can relate it to you in the Arabic that I think it is, because I'm not certain of it. I'm not going to give you what I'm not certain of. It says in the English translation, with the name of Allah, most gracious, most merciful, when comes the help of God in victory, and thou dost see the people entering God's religion in crowds, celebrate the praises of thy Lord and pray for his forgiveness. For he is oft returning to grace and mercy. Allahu Akbar. They coming. They are coming. They ain't got nowhere else to go. And you are to pray for his forgiveness, because when they come, they're going to indict you. The people on your job are going to indict you. The people in your block are going to indict you. They're going to point the finger and they're going to say, why did you tell me it was like this? You've been here for how many years? You'll say, what? What? You said, how long ago? If you're wise, when that happens, you'll pray for forgiveness. You'll submit and you'll pray for Allah's forgiveness. Would y'all like to hear a song?
Yeah. What would you feel like, though?
I feel like hearing a song, y'all. We're going to bring forward and allow a brother who has put to music.
With the name Allah, most gracious, most compassionate, all praises to Allah, the Godhead, Exalter, Cherisher, the Sustainer of all the world. I bear witness that nothing is worthy to worship except Allah alone. There is nothing like Him. And I bear witness that Muhammad is the Messenger of Allah. Dear beloved Muslims, friends, yes, peace be unto you. Assalamu alaikum. Businessmen, and other groups who are working hard to improve the conditions in our society within the masjid and outside of the masjid. Let us all thank Allah for honoring us, this distinguished guest. And at this time, with our attention, Dr. John S. Wallace.
Thank you. It means that the man who puts TV dinners together has to pay people to cook the dinners, has to pay people to put the pieces on the pan, the tray, has to pay people to put packages together, has to pay people to do all those things. And so if in fact the man raises the wages of those people, then what happens to the price of the TV dinner? It goes up. And the poor man, like you and me, are caught in the middle. So the price of the dinner goes up, then the wages have to go up, then the prices go up. And that's what inflation is all about. Did you know that the farmer out there in the field that works very hard, only gets about 38 cents of the dollar that you pay for food? That farmer only gets 38 cents. The rest of the money is in the whole processing of the food. For example, he's got to put fertilizer on his land. He's got to buy equipment. He's got to then sell it to somebody who's going to process that food and make it into a pizza, if that's what it's got to be. And so the farmer only gets 38 cents. The rest of your money, the other 62 cents, goes to the processor and to the grocery man and to the grocery store. Everybody has to make a little bit more and a little bit more. Now, that's what inflation is. And it took me a little while to understand it because I've always been for higher wages, higher minimum wages, because so many of us earn minimum wages. And I don't want to say that I'm for lower wages, but I do know that the private sector over here often raises prices because they say they're going to have to raise wages. Now, nobody, as I said, is volunteering to do anything about inflation. Nobody has volunteered to do one thing except the president, who has said, no, we must do something else. We must stand up and be counted. We must take a stand. So our president has said that he will do something in the federal government. Let me explain some of the things. One of the things he said he will do is be more productive. Now that's in the government, and it also applies to you. In other words, did you know that in 1979, we all behaved like the folks did during the Depression? We don't save our pennies. We don't work as hard as we used to. We don't do all the things that we ought to. We don't shop like we should. We don't calculate all the money we spend. We are not as productive a nation as we used to be. Because we got used to having everything. Television, radio, cars, lots of gasoline. We don't think we need to do that. But if we're in a time when prices are high, we must do that. We must do that. Because we must be together to survive. We must. And so we must learn how to be more productive on our jobs. The president said, we have got to have somebody stand up, and I am willing to be that person against the increased demand for defense contracts, for highway contracts, for local governments, farmers, educators, because every one of these groups can make a case for what he or she needs. We've got to tighten up government spending. And so the president said to us, to people like me, who have jobs in government, and I supervise 2,000 people in government. The president said, you must see to it that your people work efficiently, and if people are not efficient, then we don't need them in government. The president said to me that I must be accountable to the Secretary of Agriculture and to him that my people must be accountable, because it's your tax money that pays my salary. It's your money. I am your servant. You pay my salary. The president has said we cannot take away programs such as the food stamp program, which comes from the Department of Agriculture, the programs that help those who need help. We cannot take away programs like the Women and Infant Care Program, the WIC program that gives food and nutritional supplements to women who are expecting children and to young babies. He has said we cannot take away the things that we need to give to the poor, but we must redirect our funds. We must take them from here and put them over here. Instead of just saying more of your tax dollars, more spending. The president has said somebody has to stand up and be counted. Now, if you've ridden on an airplane lately, you know that another thing the president did was to deregulate the airfares. In other words, the airplane fares used to all be the same price. And now, since they said no more, take away the regulation, the airplanes are competing for each other, for me to ride on them, for you to ride on them. And so some plane lines are cheaper now. And that's one of the things that deregulating, taking away the rules, helps. You know, in a federal government, you can have so many rules that you need a whole group of people to write them, to run them, to monitor them. And that's some more of your tax money. And the president said, we don't want any more of that. We are going to have a deregulation council that's going to see whether these rules overlap and get rid of them, because it only means more of your tax dollars going for things you don't need. Well, the president has now said to the private sector, to those people that you may work for, please only raise salaries up to 7% more. He has said also, please do not raise prices any more than 5.5% or 5.75%. And people say, well, I mean, what can he do if Company X decides to raise prices 10%? And he really does not have control of each person or each company, but he does have some things he can do. You know, the federal government buys millions and billions of dollars worth of things from contractors. And he has said that if there is anybody who doesn't do or doesn't cooperate with this 5.75% increase of prices, then the government is not going to buy anything from them. Now, he's also said that we are not going to buy in the government anymore. More debt, paper, pencils, that we're going to cut down on flying around the country. Fortunately, I got to fly here. But that we're going to cut down on doing some of the things that we were used to doing. Like Iman, to get busy and get beyond and behind these kinds of proposals so that these prices will stop going up, 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 because they're pricing us all into a depression. The administration now is working very hard to not only cut down on one side, but to do as much as we can to open the doors for those of us who have never been in those doors. When I was a girl, I learned two things. One was that I should have all the education that I could find anywhere. Because my mother said to me,
education is one of the things that once you get it, who does it belong to? It only belongs to you. And nobody, nobody can ever take education away from you. And so anything that you learn anywhere, you keep on learning it. You keep learning as much as you can from any place. You keep on growing because it only belongs to you. And I know that you are very interested in this community, in education. And I know that our young people need that interest because they need to know that the only way we can break through some of these barriers is to be educated, to know what we're doing, to move out and to get on top of it. Somebody told me once that Bilalian people were the strongest people in the world. Why? Because we always have more barriers than anybody else. We have been through slavery. We have been through the anti-slavery movement, the Jim Crow movement. We have been through everything that anybody can think of. And we're here. We're here. And you know, if somebody told me that, it made me think about a story. And the story is about the rooster and how the rooster faces the storm. You know, the rooster, when the storm comes, he puts his head down and he puts his wings around him. And he just stands there and takes the storm. But you know what the eagle does? The eagle spreads his wings and he flies above the storm. And that's what we've done. Because we wouldn't even be here today. We wouldn't have survived storm after storm after storm after storm. And so, as I said, you broke one of the biggest barriers in your $22 million contract. But that's not enough. All those things that I said about what our administration have done, the president, the secretary, and I know that that's not enough, that we got to keep on doing things like that. And so we started a new office, an Office of Economic Development, an office called the Small and Disadvantaged Business Utilization Office, because usually it's these giant firms that get the contracts. It's not the little bitty guys. And so we have in agriculture today, because of a law that has been passed, a new Office of Small and Disadvantaged Business Utilization to help assist those of us in business to find our share of the bread. This kind of progress, though, can be undermined if we don't do something about inflation. Now, the president is going to establish inflation councils, and we know that there are those of you who should be sitting on those councils. There are going to be all kinds of hearings in relation to inflation. And you should talk, you should tell people how it affects you, how the change in those prices in those stores affects you. But you have to do some other small things. You have to find ways of dealing with pressures and barriers and inflation that you've never done before. You have to find ways of doing things cooperatively. You have to find simple things like turning off the ignition on your car and not leaving it running to waste gasoline. You're going to have to find and tell your children to turn the lights off in your house, because this winter in this city is going to be cold. And that heat and that electricity is not going to be in large supply. So you're going to be paying more this year. And so you've got to do personally something about inflation. As we meet today in one of the largest cities, in the midst of dark and troubled times, we must do these things that show our people the light. You, your leader, can serve as an inspiration to the nation, communicated across the nation, and can enlist other voices to join, declaring that we can do the best of things in the worst of times like we always have. Your movement can be a catalyst for other Americans as you join in the fight against inflation. You can become participants and advocates. You can become the light in the darkness. Now, I'm reminded as I close of another story. And this story is about a miracle worker and a doubter. And the miracle worker, whoever he was, walked around and did miracles in the city of Chicago. And the doubter said, "I'm going to get that miracle worker. I'm not going to let him show that he is indeed a leader. I'm going to get him." And so he said, "The way I'll get the miracle worker is I'll put a bird in my hand. And I'll hold the bird up to the miracle worker and I'll say, 'I have a bird in my hand. Is that bird alive? Or is that bird dead?' And if the miracle worker says the bird is dead, then I will open my hand and the bird will fly away. And if the miracle worker says the bird is alive, then I will close my hand and the bird will be dead. Oh, I'm going to get that miracle worker." And so he went to the miracle worker and he said, "Is the bird alive or is the bird dead?" And the miracle worker looked at the doubter and he said, "It's in your hands."
And appreciate the voice of wisdom. Thank you very much. There's a Dr. Ansari visiting with us today. Dr. Ansari is downstairs right now, and he would like to have all the members of the world community of Islam in the West who are here with us here in Chicago today, who have been in this community and were with the Honorable Master Elijah Muhammad. May Allah be pleased with him and forgive him for his sins in the 1930s. Dr. Ansari would like to see those members downstairs for an interview. And the Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad ask that you allow him to interview you. So those members who have been with the community, who are with the Honorable Master Elijah Muhammad since 1930, please go downstairs and see Dr. Ansari for this interview. Allahu Akbar. At this time, I want to ask the Brother Imam to come back. The Honorable Wallace D. Muhammad, we have another guest, I believe, who wants to call forward. For those of you who are not aware, when we say takbir, it means glorify Allah. We do not clap in the masjid. It's not an Islamic practice. We say, we glorify Allah. We call for takbir, which means glorify Allah. And we say, Allahu Akbar, which means Allah, God, is most great. Imam Walafi Muhammad. Takbir! Takbir! Takbir!
Allahu Akbar. Dear beloved Muslims, friends, we have with us two scholars. One of them will be speaking to us in a few minutes. The other, I would like to introduce him, though he's not to speak to us this afternoon. He is Dr. Zafar Ansari, a Muslim from Saudi Arabia, born in Pakistan, I believe, who has prepared a manuscript on the Nation of Islam under the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's leadership and its new development and new community, the world community of Islam in the West. I'm very much interested in his scholarly work. I believe it's going to help convey the right image of our community to the other part of the world, our Muslim brothers and sisters overseas. I endorse his work, and I hope that we will meet him with the same friendly face, the same kindness that he has shown us since he has been among us. He himself was a guest of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in 1957, and he got personally acquainted with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He has been an admirer of the positive things that we have been doing for many, many years now. Dr. Ansari is at this time interviewing the senior members of the Nation of Islam. If there is any senior member who has been in the community, has been with this community, that is, when it was Nation of Islam from the early 30s, would you please go downstairs, and it will only take a few minutes. Dr. Ansari is interviewing the senior members downstairs. He is more interested in those who have a membership from 1930, from the early 30s and mid-30s. And we still have with us brothers and sisters who accepted the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, or the teachings of W.D. Farrar, from the very early 30s and mid-30s. At this time, I want to introduce to our community, that is the national community, a very, I think, very sincere writer, who is not a Muslim, but a very sincere writer. And we want to give every opportunity and every freedom to those writers who are sincere. There are so many who are not sincere, and they write things to distort the truth. But this writer has impressed me as a very sincere person who is interested in nothing but truth, I believe. The writer's name is Mary Edwards. She has received my personal endorsement for her book that she's now preparing on the development, the Nation of Islam, and the developments in the Nation of Islam. Now, those are my words. She will describe her own project to you. So let us now give our attention to Miss Mary Edwards.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you. Recently I asked a Muslim brother if it would be presumptuous of me to use the Muslim greeting or to return it when it's given to me. He said, no, indeed, that Muslims appreciate that greeting very much and that it is not meant to be the greeting of one particular people alone. I was very glad to hear that because I find it an especially beautiful greeting. I feel that keeping the wish of peace on the tip of one's tongue is bound to do beautiful things for the soul. It reminds us of what should be uppermost in our thoughts, to be at peace with strangers, with our friends, with our loved ones, and with our God. I would like to thank Imam Wallace B. Muhammad for the opportunity to speak with you today and for his kind introduction. And I would like to thank all of you present for your hospitality and your kindness, which always make me feel at home, and I do feel at home here. Some of you may remember that I came to the Masjid Honorable Elijah Muhammad once last November. I came to Chicago for a few days, and I met with the Imam at that time. A great many more of you have probably seen me more frequently in the past 2 months because I have been coming to the Masjid nearly every Sunday and often on Tuesday nights to the Clara Muhammad School. That is because I have moved to Chicago